This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're coming to you as we go back into the football season because we've had a week off. Players have got a little bit of downtime as well. The country's had a bit of downtime. A little bit of bad news as Her Majesty the Queen, as we all know, died last week. So we took some time out to reflect on her life. But now the football season is back and we move on. And I'm Billy Grant and I'm sitting here in the virtual joint. And the reason why I'm in the virtual joint is because I know that on Sunday, not Saturday, but Sunday, I'm going to be in the joint. I'm going to be in the Globe very early, because we're going to be there for the Arsenal game, which has now been moved to a 12 o'clock kickoff because of the Queen's funeral on the Monday. So we need to get down to the pub as early as we can do. So listen, when the sun rises, trust me, I'll be in the boozer with my chums, enjoying myself. And on the house is my man, Laney. Laney, how are you?
I'm good, and I'll be with you bright and breezy on Sunday morning. And yeah, as you say, I'm good. Yeah, it's been a strange week, isn't it, for us all? You know, obviously saying goodbye to part of the furniture. The Queen's served us amazingly for 70 odd years, and yeah, it's the end of an era. So yeah, it's been a bit of a strange time for everyone. Everyone kind of mourns in a different way, or not at all, or completely and utterly. But yeah, things haven't been as they are normally this week. So it'll be good to get back to football on Sunday for sure.
Indeed. And we've got Ali Mullally in the house from her game too. Ali, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm a bit tired, Bill, because as you know, I work in TV news. So it's a bit of a busy time for some of us at the moment. So yeah, I'm looking forward to having a day off on Sunday and getting down to see some football.
Yeah, I mean, talking about day off on Sunday, I mean, the day off on Saturday, I was saying last week, and like I said to you, you know, we recorded the podcast last week on the Thursday and we saw that there was some activity going on, but we didn't really mention it because it wasn't appropriate at the time because there was nothing being announced. But it was looking like there was something that was, you know, something that was afoot, as I say. And like I said to you, a few hours later, after we released the podcast, the Queen very sadly died, and the country went into mourning. And then they decided to close down the football on the Saturday, which meant that, you know, we had more time to reflect. Now, what I will say as well is that, I mean, I found that Saturday really, really weird, because we had one situation where, you know, we had the Queen, and like many people in this country, I've grown up with the Queen from when I was born, because she's obviously around from before I was born, you know, and Prince William, I mean, my birthday's the same day, sorry, as Prince Charles, is my birthday the same day as Prince Charles, so I've always sort of had that little celebration as I was growing up, you know, the same day as Prince Charles. And, you know, the Queen, like I said to you, has been like a sort of staple item within your life, you know, whether or not you're sort of a royalist, a monarchist, whether or not you just, you know, you monitor what they do or you don't. It doesn't matter. They've been a staple part of my whole life. And I mean, I wrote a little thing to a few of the sort of the Besotted crew, and I think, you know, for the Global people as well, Besotted Global people, where I was sort of saying it's almost like a bit of a comfort blanket, you know, where the Queen's there and you know that she's there, she's a constant, you know, as a West Indian background. I mean, I used to live in Jamaica, and I remember when the royal family visited Jamaica as well, and I actually even went out with my mum and my brother at the time, or my two brothers, my brother at the time, he's still my brother, and we went out to go and meet the princess and all sorts of characters at some sort of, you know, botanical gardens, I think it was. And the West Indian, you know, the West Indian community loved the Queen. They loved the royals. They loved all this kind of, you know, the whole royal family thing. And that was sort of kind of be part of my sort of kind of growing up. And like I said to you, it was just a really, really, really weird moment and a period over that weekend where there was no football, which is your norm. And there's no football. If your team isn't playing, then you go and try and find some other football, you know, as you do, or find some non-league, or, you know, do a bit of grassroots. But there was just no football whatsoever. At that time, there was meant to be football, and then there was no Queen, and just everything was really different. And I just found it really, really strange. How about you, Lainey?
Yeah, it's strange that you had you share a birthday with the Prince of Wales, because I shared a birthday with the Queen herself, June the 10th. Ooh, which, okay. Yeah, really, really odd. So obviously we are regal. It's as you say, it's just the end of an era, and whatever your opinions on anything, they, you know, they're the fabric that hold us all together. And no one can condemn, you know, the way she's served us. Just dedicated her life to the nation for the last 70 years. So, yeah, it's a strange time, and this transition has been kind of like just kind of awkward, I'd say. And I think as soon as we can sort of get back to normality, the better, really.
And Ellie, I mean, this must have been really strange for you as well, because you're like in the thick of it, basically, because you're seeing everything that's going on. You're hearing every comment from every person that's perched outside whichever building they're perched outside, whether or not it's up in Scotland or it's in the Midlands, or if it's outside, you know, where the, you know, Buckingham Palace or wherever, you know, wherever it may be. So you've almost got a slightly different perspective, because obviously you've got your own feelings, but also you've got this, the whole world is sort of coming at you from the news angle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was actually off work all the Saturday, so I didn't get called in. So I actually sat at home and watched the cricket, which I think England cricket did a very good job of honouring the Queen on the Saturday morning. And it was quite moving, actually. But it is a bit of a sand shifting under your feet moment, I think, isn't it? Because the Queen's been there all of our lives, and now suddenly she's not there. And like you say, TV news, it just comes at you, just see everything and hear everything, and it's non-stop at the moment, and it's quite exhausting, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I mean, and then there was obviously the conversation, and I don't think we're going to really delve into this too much, but I think there was lots of conversations going on about how they felt that the football and the FA had moved too quickly in cancelling games, and there was a lot of kind of, not misinformation, but we just didn't know what was going on a lot of the time. You know, I've got, you know, my grassroots team, the old Barnet Panthers, we had our first match that we were sort of really excited about, then obviously that got cancelled as well, as did other grassroots football. However, you know, a lot of people say, but, you know, some things are more important than that, and at the end of the day, sort of respecting the Queen and going out and having time to reflect is more important than these things, and they can be put on the ice and moved to another time. And all I'm emphasising the fact that there were lots of different conversations happening at the time, where some people were thinking, actually, if the sport remained, then we would actually be able to actually, as a nation, go out there. And what's better than seeing, you know, fans actually doing a 1 minute silence, or the bands coming out and playing tributes to her, as opposed to everyone sort of kind of being inside their houses, then you don't actually feel anything. So I don't think there's any right or wrong answer about that, because I think the FA and the football authorities actually had to make a decision at some stage as to what was better. And maybe the fact also, because Prince William is a patron, I think it's Prince William,
yeah,
is a patron
of
the FA.
Yeah.
I think maybe they also thought, actually, maybe we need to kind of maybe just tack back a little bit here. But, you know, like I said to you, many, many questions were going around, and I think half the time they're going around, it was a lot of people were singing on Saturday afternoon, basically sort of almost like twiddling their thumbs. I mean, I was down at B&Q, which is one of the things that you do, which is, you know, it's been on a long list of things that I had to do for ages, though, isn't it? But anyway,
well, Prince William's an Aston Villa fan, isn't he? I think he was just really happy that they didn't lose again at the weekend.
that's right. So anyway, talking about sort of really sad moments and commiserations, the first manager, well, pretty much the first manager to manage Brentford from when I supported them, actually, he died this week, Fred Callaghan. And I say that because, again, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and you know, sort of saying, you know, we won't really remember Fred Callaghan, but I do remember Fred Callaghan. Obviously, the media isn't like it is now, where, like, you know, because we were Brentford, we were never on the TV, you know, so it would always be sort of somehow in person or in the local newspapers. But Fred Callaghan was the manager of the team that I remember very well. You know, my first team that I supported, Brentford, the Chris Kamara, the Stan Bowles, the Francis Josephs of the world were actually bought into the team by Fred Callaghan, who, you know, at the time, I mean, I thought he was actually quite a good manager, you know, but then I didn't know any different because I was very young at the time, and it was the only manager that I knew, and it's the only team that I knew, and I thought Brentford was just brilliant, even though they were languishing sort of in the midst of the third division at the time. But Fred Callaghan, Laney, do you remember the man?
I don't remember the man. I'm kind of a similar age to you. I was too young to really kind of be aware of the manager. I mean, Bill Dodgin, he was the manager of the team when I first went, and then Callaghan replaced him. And I do remember vividly Fred Callaghan in that season that he took over, where we were in kind of a relegation dogfight. And I do vividly remember Tony Funnell scoring the equalising goal. I think it made it 2-2 in the final game of the season. And that secured our place in the third tier, where we stayed for forever and a day, it seemed.
Who was that again?
Yeah, it was against Millwall.
I was there. See, I was in that game, and I was actually... Why do you talk about that? Because I remember that as well. I was with my mates, and what we did for some ridiculous reason, I don't know why we did this, we decided that we wanted to go around and to the Ealing Road side, which was the Millwall end, and go and watch the game from there. And then we thought we'd actually move around in the second or whatever it may be.
That's the days, so
we moved into the Millwall end, and then the police decided to shut it off. So we were actually stuck in the Millwall end, I think, for the whole game. So we were stuck in the Millwall game for the whole, and then we scored the goal, which actually made us sort of safe. But we couldn't really celebrate because obviously there was lots of Millwall fans around us. So I remember that actually very, very well.
I remember that there always seemed to be like a pitch invasion on the final game of the season. And I think this almost certainly was then. And I think it may have been before the final whistle went. And it was tense, you know. I was too young to really get the tenseness, and I'm sure there's people listening to this that kind of like remember it in a little bit more detail than me. But it was a great team, actually, and it was, you know, it was certainly too good to go down. It always baffled us why we weren't quite good enough to go up, because the sum of the parts was just excellent, and there was some superb skill within that, and there was just always something that seemed to kind of stop us getting that consistency together. The fans still talk about that midfield now, you know, Bowles, Kamara, Hurlock, you know, Ron Harris, although it was the end of his career, he played, you know, Gary Roberts was still knocking around, and, you know, Tony Funnell, he could score, Bob Booker was still there, you know, it was a really good team, you know, they just weren't quite good enough to get into the second tier, and, you know, that was really galling, and that kind of just summed up almost like three decades of being a Brentford fan, really. They just stuck in that third tier for, as I said, forever. But yeah, Fred was a, you know, he was a good guy. He was well respected, and no one's got a bad word to say about him. He was a, you know, he was a one club man as a player. He represented, you know, he was an apprentice at Fulham, and he kind of graduated through, and then he, you know, had his career cut short through back injury. Then went into non-league management, Enfield, and more notably at Woking.
No. Say no to Woking.
No to Woking. Well, yeah. And then he came and helped out with Fred Callaghan. Sorry, with Bill Dodgin, and then got the gig in his own right the next season. So, yeah, he was, you know, as I said, he's well remembered, and you know, I hope he rests in peace, and our regards go out to his family and all his close friends.
Yeah, and you know that, you said that no one had a bad word to say against him. But I have to admit, in those days when I used to get the Royal Oak and I used to make up really terrible songs that everyone used to sing. I say everyone, probably had about 3,000 people. There was still quite a lot of people in the Royal Oak then. And I did make up a song about Fred Callaghan when he sold Bobby Booker, because I wasn't very happy about that at all. I think that must have been sort of towards the back end of his reign as well. And it had some few naughty words in there, which I don't think I can actually repeat on there as well. But yeah, so Fred Callaghan was definitely noted, and we and like I said to you, I remember him, and like I said to you, RIP Fred Callaghan, because you were my formative years of being a Brentford fan, which I loved coming to, from school and, going there and being up the Royal Oak and throwing confetti and all the nonsense that used to go on at the Royal Oak in them days. Those are all in the Callaghan era, and, bringing Francis Joseph, who was one of the most exciting players of a long time to come down to Brentford as well, after he'd, a week after he'd scored. I think he must have scored a hat-trick against us, or he scored a few goals in a night game, and I thought, oh, he's quite good, that player. And then a couple of days later, he turned up and he was playing for Brentford, and he was like one of my favourite players, Francis Joseph, who actually did a social for Beside a few years ago. You could check that out on prideofwest.london. It is very, very funny, him and Gary Roberts. But yes, listen, RIP Fred Callaghan. But tell you something, we talked about Bobby Booker being outed by Fred Callaghan, but also there's another player that was outed by Fred Callaghan. There's a lot of people that watch the TV out there and they see Bradley Walsh doing his mainstream TV stuff, but they didn't know, a lot of these people, that Bradley Walsh actually used to play for Brentford FC. And the manager that decided that he was not going to play for Brentford anymore was Fred Callaghan. And Bradley had something to say about this at the 125th dinner that we had a few years ago. Check out Bradley Walsh about Fred Callaghan.
2 years ago, I was sitting having dinner with Les Strong, and Les Strong said to me, he said, what made you finish playing, Brad? I said, I've got trouble with my ankle. At my ankles? Do you know what an ankle is? It's a bit like an ankle. But it's very little ankles, they're ankles. They're Scottish ankles, ankles though. Jackie's got two of them. And I'm sitting with Les, and he said, what, mate? And I said, I've trouble my ankles, I had to pack up. Eddie Lyons was the physio and stuff like that. And I had to pack up. And I said, well, Fred Callaghan sacked me. Bummed. I said, Fred Callaghan sacked me. He said, he let me go. He went, wait there. He got his phone out, he was sitting at dinner, and he rang Fred Callaghan. Sent him. He went, Fred? I've got something, Fred, but you can hear him, don't forget. He said, I've got someone to talk to you, Fred. He said, someone wants to speak to you. And he handed the phone to me. And Fred went, who's that? I said, Fred, it's Bradley Walsh. He went, I bet you're fucking glad I let you go now, eh?
England are playing next week. They're playing Italy on a Friday night, and then they're playing Germany on a Monday night in the Nations League. And I never thought I'd say this, but potentially appearing, or will definitely be on the bench, and I'm sure that he'll make an appearance at some stage, is going to be a player in red and white stripes. And we're not talking about Sunderland, we're not talking about Southampton, we're talking about the mighty, mighty Bees have got a player in the England squad. And I will say to you that I am so proud. This is such a moment. This is a massive moment for any Brentford fan out there, because I never thought in my lifetime that I'm going to see a Bees player playing for England. A player that I can go out there and say, he plays for my club. But Ivan Toney has been called up to England. Well-deserved call-up. And there was a lot of excitement in the Besotted camp. A lot of excitement in the Brentford camp. I even went to AFTV, Arsenal Fan TV Studios today. And all I was talking about is Ivan Toney. I was on the Anfield Rap podcast as well today. And all I was talking about Ivan Toney playing for England. Because for me, you have to tell the whole world that we have got a player playing for England. And no, he doesn't have to go and sign for a big club to go and play for England. All these things that people talk about, all these things that we have just blown out the water, oh, they need Premier League experience, oh, they need Championship experience, oh, you've got this, that, the other. We're blowing all these things out the water and just showing people we're doing things our way. So Ivan Toney, show people the way next week. But I'm very proud. Laney, how are you?
This is off the scale, isn't it? This is, as you say, as I tweeted earlier, not in my lifetime This is being added to a long and growing list of things that I never thought I'd ever see. It beats Man United losing 4-0 to us. This is our player playing for our country, and he stands every chance of going to the World Cup. You know, we know how special he is, and he's contagious. You give him the chances, he'll score you the goals. You get a penalty, he'll score you the goals. Ivan Toney is England ready. He's World Cup ready. He needs to now seize this opportunity. But, you know, I'm pinching myself today, and I think we're all skipping round, sharing in Ivan Toney's success. You know, this is Ivan Toney's achievement, and, you know, well done him. You know, we're just so happy for you, and we're just so proud that you're at our club making these achievements. I'm sure, you know, fans of the clubs that he's played at before, they're buzzing as well. You know, there's a lot of people that shared in this journey, but Brentford have enabled this. And, you know, it's part of it, this incredible success story that doesn't show any signs of slowing. As I said, I'm buzzing.
Ali?
Oh, you know, I hope he doesn't step onto the pitch wearing red and white stripes because we're wearing the wrong kit. But no, it's brilliant. Again, it's like Delaney says, something none of us ever thought we would ever see. And I think it's thoroughly deserved. He's improved every season with us. It's just getting better and better. He's, for me, easily the best English striker we've got behind Harry Kane. I think he's the most like Harry Kane that we've got, in the fact that he will drop deep and set others up in the same way that Kane does. It's an obvious one for me, and I think it's brilliant, like Laney says, that he's been selected while he's playing at Brentford. He doesn't have to wait until he's gone off to Manchester United or wherever to get selected, and it's absolutely fantastic. The only thing I would say is that I think Rico Henry should be in there as well. I cannot see how some of the left backs that are in there get in there ahead of Rico Henry, but that's hopefully his time will come as well, and we'll all be equally as proud as we are of Ivan today. It's a brilliant day to be a Brentford fan.
Maybe Southgate was just going one B at a time, Ali, and I agree with you that, you know, he warrants his place there too, but, you know, maybe he's worried about some sort of press backlash going, oh, you picked two Brentford players, what are you doing, man? You know, what are you doing? This is crazy. So hopefully Ivan can show that his selection's completely and utterly justified, and then Rico will be joining him for the next lot.
Hopefully, yeah.
The lobbying has been going on. That's all I'm going to say. And the thing about, I think players like say, for example, Rico, if you speak to a lot of fans don't actually know about Rico Henry. And the thing is that even though these players are like in the limelight, you know, I mean, Ivan Toney's in the limelight, people know about him, but you know, I think if you're in the England camp, you still don't know. We watch him week in and week out, okay? So we actually see him week in and week out. We know his strengths and his weaknesses, what he does, all the hard work that he does. But to be quite honest with you, not necessarily everybody else is like that. And especially when you've got so many players all around, I think that there's a tendency that you could go with England a little bit, you know, risk averse. So you don't take the risks as such, even though, you know, if you play in a team like San Marino, technically, you know, why not play somebody like Ivan Toney against San Marino? You go a little bit risk averse because you think in the long term, are we going to bring this person? Is it better to get somebody who I'm going to have in the camp in 6 months' time or for this championship to have them now? Which, you know, I do understand that to a certain extent, but I think that even though they may be on our radar, it still may not be on somebody else's radar, because when they go in and watch him or they look at the stats, whatever like that, they don't see. It doesn't necessarily light the fires that it does with us, because we see them all the time. And I think with Ivan, even though Ivan Toney kept on going, you've got to look at this guy, you've got to look at this guy, I personally believe it was the Manchester United game that really kind of did it for him. Even though he didn't score any goals, but it was a game that we as Brentford as a team were on fire. And there were a lot of people watching that game. And I have to say, and I'm not going to mention any names, I got a few messages from people who went, oh my God, your team is on fire. And these people I was talking to are in that circle who can throw in information into that England setup. And they go, your team is properly on fire. And I think at that time they thought, Brentford, they're not a team to mess around with. It's not like we've got a person inside here who's a brilliant player within a team who, like, to be quite honest with you, aren't all that good. The team is really good. The manager's really good. They're playing great football and they've been doing it consistently. And now we show what they've done. And I think as a result of that match and then what happened after that and then the three goals that he scored against Leeds, it was a done deal. They just thought, listen, this guy's the real deal. And I think sometimes it takes something like that. We've seen Ivan Rico Henry playing some games where he's just properly on fire. But what's happened is that it just misses that radar. And I think that you need to, you almost need to have somebody, you know, probably in their ear as well who knows it. So say, for example, Ivan Tony's in the camp. You've got to look at my boy Rico, mate. I work with him. He's on fire, blah, blah. And then you've got a trusted source within there, because there was no real trusted source within the Brentford camp that can go inside and say something within that. And now you've got that, I think it'll be a different situation altogether.
I think Rico's time will come. And, you know, I think having listened to a lot of the sound bites and the words that have been said on Sky this afternoon with Thomas Frank, said that, you know, he'd spoken to, or sorry, Gareth Southgate had said he'd sat down and spoken to Thomas Frank about Ivan Tony last season. It showed that the dialogue has been going on, and I think it's just getting, it's frustrating because you know that he's good enough, but you're almost waiting for something that's kind of like some stars to align that are kind of out of anyone's control, and sometimes form doesn't seem to be measured or taken into account when selections are made, but Ivan Tony is so on form that to have not picked him now is crazy. And I agree with Ali completely and utterly that Rico deserves his time too. But I do think that will come. And, you know, he just needs to carry on doing his thing. And I'm sure that Rico Henry was part of that bigger dialogue between Thomas Frank and Gareth Southgate. So, yeah, I just hope all goes well for him next Friday night in Italy. I'm going to do all I can to get there. And then for the game against Germany back at Wembley on that Monday night. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of Brentford fans trying to get tickets for Wembley for Monday week, with the hope of seeing a Brentford player running out and pulling on that England shirt. I mean, we shared in the joy when Ollie Watkins came on and scored as a Villa player. I've sat there and watched Andy Sinton play for England. I've sat there and watched, you know, other Brent players that have gone through and stepped up, and you're kind of like, ah, oh God, they had to leave to do this. Now they don't. They can stay. And I just hope that Ivan can stay for a long, long time. He doesn't have to go. He's put another £10 million on his price, but he doesn't have to go.
Yeah, and I was there actually with Ollie Watkins scored for England, and again it was a very proud moment, and I was there and I felt like I was, you know, he was still a Brentford player and I supported him loads, and I was just so happy to see him score because we know that he's got the love for us as well. And and like I said to you, a little story which I think I might have told you before as well, but when I went out to San Marino, because as a lot of you know, I go to, you know, England tournaments, England games all over the world, and 17th tournament coming up, which is in Qatar, which is, I thought about it for quite a lot of tournaments actually, but I went to San Marino because it was the first England game that I've been to a couple of years, because of the lockdown. Then I was in this bar in San Marino and I was chatting to these Newcastle fans, and they come up to me, they're going, oh, you support Brentford? Okay, Brentford, I go, Ivan Tony. And I'm like, yeah, Ivan Tony, yeah, he's cool. You know, I'm saying, yeah, Ivan Tony, man, yeah, he should be playing today. He should be playing for England. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. You know, they said, why? And this was like, San Marino was like 2-3 months after we just got in the Premier League. We had a good start in the Premier League. But for me, I was thinking, the last thing you want is that your striker playing for England at that time, 1 month before the window is going to open, then he leaves, then you're going to be in all sorts of trouble, and before you know it, you might be in relegation trouble. So I thought, no, I don't think I should play for England. I think that, you know, I just want him to concentrate on keeping Brentford in the Premier League. And they just kept on banging on, going, no, he's good enough. You've got Calvert-Lewin at the moment now. I mean, if you tell me that Ivan Tony isn't better than Calvert-Lewin, you're stupid. And they just kept on, and they were almost convincing me that he should play. Then they went to me, look, who are we playing today? And I went, San Marino. Said, if Ivan Tony can't do a job against San Marino, mate, then who can? And I just thought, actually, you've got a point. And he could have played in that game. I mean, England won about 10-0 or something. Like, I can't even remember the score. There were so many goals scored, like, you know. And he could have done a really good job. And I just thought, actually, the moment could have come earlier, but it's this whole risk averse thing again, I think, with England, where they, you know, you America at the moment are giving caps away like confetti. And, you know, they're making sure that their players get international experience that enables them to go abroad. But with England, I think they could probably try a little bit harder by squeezing these players into certain games and getting them out there. And he's got his caps now, but, you know, with Ivan, he probably could have got there a little bit sooner if there was probably less risk averse. But I'm not complaining, because we're happy. And I'm very, 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 very looking forward to going to Qatar now. I was looking forward before, but I am, because fingers crossed, and you might not make it, you know, that the idea of my player, my Brentford player, going to play in a World Cup for me is, for England, is just on another scale, because I never thought I'd see that happen.
I do think that it got to the point with Ivan, because he's been so on fire this season, that there was a concerted media campaign behind Ivan Toney has to play for England. You had Gary Lineker, you had TalkSport, everybody was saying Ivan Toney should be in the squad. And I think that does bring some pressure to bear. I think it became such a thing that with the media that Ivan Toney surely has to be picked. You had all the stats about how he was involved in more goals than any other England player apart from Harry Kane in the last two seasons. And I think it just got to the point where he could no longer be ignored, however risk-averse you are. And Southgate is very risk-averse. I don't dislike Southgate, but he is very risk-averse. And I think Ivan just became, by sheer force, almost sheer force of will and his presence and the way he's playing, became impossible to ignore. And everybody else, all the media, fans of other clubs, were all picking, all the chatter since the Man United and the Leeds games have been Ivan Toney should be in the England squad, Ivan Toney should be in the England squad. And that's from media outlets, from fans, on Twitter, everywhere. And I think it just became impossible to ignore, however risk-averse you are.
I think there's very, very much a case of things happen at the right time in the modern era for Brentford. You know, we can be scarred by, you know, going back over history and things not happening when we probably deserve them to happen. You know, we didn't go up against Yeovil and we didn't go up against Fulham in that playoff games, but we went up the next year and we went up stronger and you know, it hurt at the time, but it's almost like everything for a reason. And perhaps if Ivan gets picked last year, it may have been too early. You know, he would have done a great job against San Marino, Bill, don't get me wrong, and he might have scored a hat-trick, but if he hadn't scored in that game, people might have said, well, if you can't score against San Marino, how the hell are you going to score against Italy and Germany? And now he's got that chance, and hopefully he just seizes it. And I've got a feeling, like all things to do with Brentford at the moment, it will be a revolving door that he walks through, and he will score two hat-tricks. We'll see.
Listen, I'm going to ask you as well, I mean, your friends, you've got friends that support different other teams. Now that Ivan Toney is now where he's doing before, how many of these friends have now said to you, oh, yeah, well, we could have signed Ivan Toney. Yeah, we could have signed. I mean, because I've had loads of them already, like, you know. Now that he's kind of there, he said, oh, yeah, he's a part of Arsenal fans, all sorts of characters sort of saying, yeah, we could have signed him, but, you know, but they didn't. I mean, he was £5 million and
exactly.
he could have gone anywhere.
Could have, should have, would have, whatever, yeah. You know, but, yeah, we could have signed, they could have, yeah, whatever.
I can think of several other signings like that. Yeah. A couple of them very recently.
Yes, indeed. So, but anyway, but listen, so all this talk about England, we needed some facts about England. So what we're going to do, we're going to go to JB with his facts and his funk, because JB has got lots of England and Brentford facts and funk.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Potentially, Ivan Toney could be the 1,272nd player to pull on an England shirt since 1872. Only two former Bees have previously played for England in full internationals. The first was in our second season in our original top-tier spell. Then it was inside right Billy Scott in October 1936, who was one of six England debutants in a home international match against Wales at Cardiff. For good measure, there were two of his teammates, Di Richards and Idris Hopkins, playing for the home side, who ran out 2-1 winners. Although back then Brentford's league match with Grimsby was also played on the same day. Without those three key players, we lost 2-0. The second was left-winger Leslie Smith in May 1939 in a friendly in Romania. England won 2-0 in a game which transpired to be the final match before war broke out, and the last international for over 7 years. Billy's cap was when Edward VIII was on the throne. Leslie's was under George VI, which shows the passage of time, as neither was during the reign of Queen Elizabeth. Both players won their sole caps away from home, so Ivan has a chance to be the first Brentford player to play for England at Wembley, and potentially the first to score, and create even more club records.
But listen, we shall move on, and this looks to be very, very good news. We're very, very happy. Ivan Tony's made us very, very proud, and you have to understand, like I said to you, from teams that have been watching our teams in the lower echelons for years. I know, like teams like Arsenal, teams like, you know, this is using teams like Arsenal in a different type of way. Teams like Man City, teams like Chelsea, you get all these players with international caps all the time. But this is the whole big team syndrome thing that happens for you. So it probably doesn't hit you in the same way as it does with us. But for us, there's a massive pride going on, and you're going to feel that pride emanating around New Griffin Park on Sunday, and hopefully it'll have a little bit of effect. Maybe it might actually help to push the ball in the back of the right net.
Well, he can at least practice singing God Save the King, can't he?
That's right, indeed. So anyway, listen, we're going to go off, have another little drink. We're going to come back because, I tell you what, it's been so long since the last time that I saw my team kick a football that I think I'm going to have to have a bit of a refresher about what happened the last time my team kicked a football. We'll be back in just a bit. So, 2 weeks ago nearly it was. Elaney, I mean, tell you something. I can't remember. How many goals did we score 2 weeks ago? Can you remember?
Five.
And it was against, it wasn't against, you know, Brighton or Wolves or, you know, Villa.
The champions of Europe.
It was against the champions of Europe.
Was it Leeds, Bill?
It was Leeds.
Oh, two out of two.
There's only one champions of Europe, Laney. Come on.
Very, very well. I'll tell you something, right, because we had this last podcast. Listen, if you're listening, Pride of West London, just go to the podcast, the Southampton podcast. It's a real shame. We recorded it. And then, unfortunately, the game became irrelevant because it got cancelled about 6 hours later. But irrelevant of that, the podcast did really well. It's like loads of people listened to it. Like, you know, it's probably like the second most popular podcast of the season. So I think it wasn't the fact that we were playing Southampton that was driving people in. It was the fact that we'd beaten Leeds. Now, it was definitely, honestly, trust me.
100%.
You need to go back, listen to that if you have to, because it'll make you chuckle, because I've got all sorts of musical interludes in there. I was being the most childish that you can ever be.
I was going to say, it was one of the most churlish things we've ever done.
It was really, really childish, but it was brilliant, and it felt so good putting in as much five as you could put. I was trying to work out, you know, remember that there was that band Five, but I just thought people probably won't remember their songs, but there was all sorts of stuff going into that pod. But anyway, let's forget about that, because what we're going to do is that we have to remind ourselves what happened during the match. So we're going to go back to the fans. I know some of you've heard it, but it's definitely worth listening to again. When after the game, I stuck the microphone up the noses of all sorts of people, and they told us exactly what they thought about that Leeds game.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I was really gutted we didn't send them down last year. Now, just for a day, I'm quite happy. That was awesome. They hate us. We're really good. That was a close game, wasn't it? They kept coming back into it. It was a good game of football. Great finishing by Tony, unbelievable. Ben Mee at the back, what a performance from him today. God knows who they're going to drop when everyone's back and fit, but what a great problem to have. Come on, you bees.
Yeah, the man of the match, of course, will go to Ivan Tony. Let us not overshadow what Ben Mee did. He had a fantastic performance. His best one so far in the Brentford shirt for us. Really was good.
There were some really great performances. Really, really tough, actually. Leeds aren't that bad. We destroyed him today.
In a sense, I don't know how we won that. We gave the ball away so many times, but they couldn't finish, we could. That's the story. Tony has to be on the plane to Qatar.
Leeds today, Bill, they looked particularly susceptible to the square ball, didn't they?
And we smashed Leeds, and I thought Ivan Tony was brilliant. I mean, why have we not had him on free kicks before today, you have to ask, but he was bloody brilliant.
This is a tough league. Look, any win you get in this league is brilliant, you know, and every team you play have got quality players.
So you've got to enjoy it. You've just got to enjoy it. And my league mate won't be happy, but there we go.
Ivan Toney's second and third goals today, just so special. So special.
The truth, in my view, penalty. Don't know if it was a penalty because I can't see from where we're sitting.
VAR.
So it's quite hard. Yeah, VAR's giving it. So penalty. The free kick again. So yeah, two goals from set pieces. Llorente tried to. I don't know. Johan Cruyff turn in the halfway line. Lost the ball. So yeah, mistakes. But you know, everyone makes mistakes. But we got punished.
I still think we went to sleep a couple of times, which isn't much. I thought we were going to be our own worst enemy for a brief period when they got their goal back, and it looked a bit, oh dear, what did we do there? But yeah, definitely, they were definitely up for it, and they definitely played like they really wanted to win it, which is, it was a great game actually. I really enjoyed that massively.
So you're saying the Leeds fans were racially abusing
absolutely,
him
absolutely.
In what way? Tell me, because obviously I'm black, so this
of
doesn't
course,
this
yeah.
is, this doesn't go down particularly well with me.
It was the bee beasted. If you imagine fill in the blanks,
yes,
it was
okay.
The bee beasted all the time. As soon as the boy put the ball on the ground, okay. So he was getting that abuse. But prior to kickoff, when we sat down, my lady was being abused as well. There was all sorts of sexual content. It was whore, slag. Slapper, all that kind of crap. It was all that stuff that was coming out. But then what was really amusing, they started calling me a paedophile. And I kept thinking, where's Jimmy Savile from? And then the abuse kind of carried on. But the stewards were allowing it to continue. But once we reacted to the steward, to the Leeds fans, the stewards actually came over and told us to be quiet. When it becomes personal and they start targeting individuals, so poor Brian on the pitch, he doesn't need that shit. We don't need the shit in the stands. If you want to shout,
sorry, that's Brian and Boomer again.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but if you want to shout that we're scum and they're scum, that's fine. But when you start targeting individuals and making it a personal thing, it doesn't become banter; it becomes aggressive.
Mate, I'm so buzzing at the minute. I'm basically coming back. I went Palace in a week here, and I thought, oh my god, I was a bit scared. But Thomas Frank made five fucking great changes. Whistler, come on, killed it. And then today we come on and we're so confident. I fucking knew he was gonna do it, and the bees are always gonna fucking do it because we're we are the best. We are the Brentford. We are the best. We are the Brentford. So, all the rest.
To a man, we was outstanding. We got Tony, got hat-trick. But to be fair, I don't even think he was the man of the match. I think Ben
Me.
He was absolutely quality. The guy was winning everything in the air. Strong in the tackle. He was running back, bringing the ball out of defence. He was doing a Rico today. He was doing a Rico.
What a game of football. It was incredible end to end, wasn't it? I thought Leeds were good. I thought Leeds played some great football. Never felt safe. When it was 3-1 and we conceded 3-2, thank God Bourne scored that goal straight away. Thank God for VAR and for the penalty. But yeah, even at 4-2, I never felt safe. I thought Leeds were really good side, much better than I've seen them for years. I thought they really played some great football. They do some nice one touch football, good team. Yeah, I think the 5-2 flattered us, but yeah, I'll take that all day long. What a result! Great result. Yeah,
sometimes it just all gels together, doesn't it? And the finishing's on point and everything just comes together. We didn't get any assists today, which I don't know what that says either about us as the offensive team or Leeds when it comes to defending. But I mean, offensively Leeds did play quite well today. It was quite scrappy in the middle. I think there should have been a few more yellow cards, but that is what it is. But defensively they were just all over the place. I mean, there was a couple of times even the defender didn't know what to do with it. Yeah, Meslier's not commanding his area like he should do, so that's definitely something that Marsh should look at going forward. But how can he when he's getting sent off? I think Ivan Toney, obviously, I've spoken to a lot of people recently about him, as he's an unconventional centre forward, mainly because he's not where you'd expect him to be as a centre forward. He's not just poaching. I mean, I love Haaland, I'm not having a go at him, but he's not poaching. He's not having eight touches an entire game and scoring three of them. He's all over the place, this heat map. He's in the box defending when there's corners. He's playing the ball. His distribution aerially is such a massive threat. We can play a ball up to the halfway line a bit further, and you know he's going to get that out to him, Mbeumo or otherwise. And then he's also scoring the goals. I think he's an invaluable player to have.
We were the better side overall. However, all the domination of possession, I don't think we created enough, to be honest. But also, I think, you know, VAR, certain things didn't come our way. So I don't think it was a 5-2 game. I think there's an unconscious bias because everyone... Because you still hear it now, dirty Leeds. That was from the 70s. There's a lot of things, but yeah, ultimately, Tyrannosaurus in that sort of attitude, and that gets us out. That's why we fight, and we'll fight to the end.
I thought we played well, really good. Tony, 3 goals, can't ask any more. Has to be in that next England squad. Equally, Rico Henry has to be in that England squad. And just, I think probably the important was the fourth one, wasn't it? Brian scoring after they made it 3-2, because they were always going to get a second. And he kind of ran through, finished it really well, which is really good to see from him, because he's probably been under a little bit of pressure. Probably, I don't know why, from himself. We all back him. And this run in, score he did, made it 4-2, killed the game. And then we made it 5 and done.
So there you go. That Leeds bloke makes me laugh. I mean, that Leeds fan, he's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. I mean, it's just in a different vein. But Laney, I mean, Leeds United game, if you think about it, and I'm trying to spin a positive on this, it means that we're going into this next game, the Arsenal game, on a positive. You know, we scored 5 goals, there was a great atmosphere, everyone was really happy. Then off the back of that, Ivan Toney has now been called up for England. I mean, I've got to touch wood a little bit here, but things are set up quite nicely for the weekend, are they not?
Things are set up perfectly, yeah. Back to back home games. You know, who will ever know what might have happened at St Mary's last Saturday? I hope we would have continued and got a win. I think we stood a really good chance. But we'll have to wait for the rearranged game to take place to get the answer to that. But yeah, we now line up against Arsenal, who will come to our part of London seeking revenge. You know, we turned them over big time in front of the world's media on the first game of last season. Although they beat us back at the Emirates. They probably deserved a far bigger victory than they got. It was 2-1 in the end, wasn't it? When Christian Norgaard got a goal right at the end. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it. I think, you know, they'll be crapping themselves, if I'm honest. You know, they've had a great start to the season, and they're under Arteta, they seem to have, you know, they've weathered that storm that we witnessed last year, and it looked like it, you know, the wheels were going to come off, and you know, but Arteta's had the time. He's got the players playing in his system. They're a joy to watch. They didn't win their last game, which is important, because they won their first 5. And I got a feeling that we're going to give them their first defeat, Mr. Grant.
Ooh, there you go, Laney. So look, tell you something, what we're going to do, go away, have a little drink. We're going to come back and then we're going to talk a little bit more about the Arsenal. So, Sunday. Arsenal coming down to New Griffin Park. They're coming down to New Griffin Park slightly different, probably slightly more aware than they did last season when they walked into New Griffin Park and it was like a rabbit in the headlights as we smashed them all over the place. And we went away with a 2-0 victory, which was very, very good. First game at New Griffin Park, under the lights, dark, first stadium full, you know, atmosphere, Thomas Frank whipping the crowd into frenzy. It was an absolutely brilliant, brilliant, brilliant night. However, like I said to you, it could be very, very different this time, because Arsenal, they're aware of us. They know what to look out for, as you saw Arteta on that All or Nothing documentary, which we talk about sort of quite a bit on here. He was very unhappy with Ivan Toney's comments about a little kick around with the boys, and he actually took the Arsenal players to task with it, and he said to them, you need to look at what he said here and you need to basically get revenge, which they did, sort of, even though we did beat them on aggregate 3-2, but we won't talk about that now. But anyway, Arsenal coming to New Griffin Park. Laney, first of all, we're looking forward to this because we're getting down to the pub at the crack of dawn, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah, I'm on the leave straight after we've finished recording this, and I'll get down there like 24 hours ahead of you. probably get there Friday morning instead of Sunday. Well, no, 48 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, 48 hours, mate. Yeah. You're in a long leash.
Yeah, well, I've got to celebrate. I've got to get the champagne out and celebrate Ivan Toney. And and keep celebrating last season's win against Arsenal. Yeah, now as I just said, they'll be out for revenge, you know, and they're fully equipped to take it if it goes their way. But I just got a feeling, you know, it's going to be another, you know, we said this before, the Leeds game, it's going to be an end-to-end game. I don't expect anything different. I think, you know, both teams can afford to go toe-to-toe. We got, you know, that win against Leeds, again, gives us the luxury of kind of not having to win. But we will want to, of course, you know, professional pride, continuing the great start. The players want to excel against opposition like that. We've got a pretty good record, you know, when all said and done, against the, you know, the top six. You know, now we've beaten Man United, the team that did the double over us. We've chalked the victory against them, so we can compete against the best teams in this division, and, you know, compete we will on Sunday morning. Sunday lunchtime. We will give Arsenal a great, great game, and it just, you know, depends who takes their chances. But, you know, it's a game that could be 3 or 4 all.
Definitely. Tell you what, I mean, we talk about Arsenal. What we're going to do, actually, we're going to go over to the man, the Don, Robbie from AFTV, or Arsenal Fan TV, as they used to be known before. I think there's some sort of copyright infringement thing going on, so they just brought their name down to AFTV. But Robbie Lyle from Arsenal TV, we've been chatting to him a lot. I was down at AFTV Studios today, actually. I did a little piece for them on AFTV. But Robbie is going to talk to us and give us the lowdown on Arsenal.
Robbie here from AFTV, also known as Arsenal Fan TV. I'm here to talk about the game, the big game coming up, Brentford versus Arsenal. Really, really looking forward to this game. Over at AFTV, we remember the pain of last year when we played Brentford. So definitely I feel like this is a game that we're really looking forward to. And also, you know, the fact that it's one of the few games on this week. We're very fortunate because, obviously, because of the death of the Queen and the police being stretched, there's been a lot of games that have been cancelled. So very fortunate that this game is still being on. So I'm hoping that Arsenal are going to make the most of it. Just talking about last season, I mean, it was quite well documented, Arsenal's season, on the documentary All or Nothing, which is basically, the season got off to a horrible start, partly due to Brentford. and then it picked up, and then Arsenal started, you know, going on a really good run. Then there were setbacks again. Then we then picked it up again and we're doing really, really well. And came down right down to the end of the season where we were really having a good shout at getting into the top four. As a matter of fact, we were in a commanding position for quite a long time, but then right at the end of the season, and I think a lot of that was due to the fact that we didn't strengthen in January, we fell away, we had a lot of injuries, and we just didn't get over the line, and we were picked to that top four spot by our deadly rivals Tottenham Hotspur, and by only 1 point, and the fact that we lost out the top four to them and European, you know, Champions League football really, really hurt. But on the positives, last season, you know, we had a really, really young side. I think the youngest side in the Premier League. There was the emergence of some really, really good players like Saka and Smith Rowe. And, you know, we've had a good summer in the transfer market. We bought in some very good players. I mean, bringing in Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko from Manchester City, especially when you look at the fact that we had no Champions League football and we were able to tempt those two to come over. That was a real coup, and both of them have been absolutely brilliant for us, especially Jesus. And then the returning William Saliba, who came back after a season-long loan at Marseille, where he was voted the young player of the season in French football. He's come back in and he's looked excellent as well. So we've had some really, really good signings in the summer. Fabio Vieira is another one of those, even though he's been injured. And we got off to a flying start of the season. You know, they tried to set us up to do another Brentford on us by sending us away to Crystal Palace on the first game of the season. But we won that. And up until our last game against Manchester United, we were on a you know, winning run. We were the only unbeaten team left in the Premier League. We'd won every game. But we did suffer that setback away from home to Manchester United, which was I was really disappointed about because I thought we completely played them off the park. But some very shaky defending and, we slipped up. So we're looking to bounce back from that. Unfortunately, our following game against Everton was called off because of we know what's been happening with the whole royal family and the Queen. So we didn't get to play that. So the first game after that defeat is going to be Brentford. Now, Brentford, I've got a lot of respect for Brentford. I mean, first of all, I love the story of how they've come through the divisions and to where they've come now, you know, and what they're doing, I think is truly remarkable. And I remember the first game against Brentford last season. I knew that we was on a hiding to nothing with that game. You know what I mean? Brentford's first game in the Premier League, in their brand new stadium. We had injuries. We had players out with COVID. It was just not right. Brentford really turned up on the night. So did their fans. And they were brilliant. And they deserved to win the game. And we ended up, you know, then having to, you know, play Chelsea after that. Then Man City and lost our first three games. But we did recover really, really well. The reverse fixture, I thought that, you know, we were pretty convincing in that we played Brentford at home, different proposition, players back, and we looked pretty comfortable in that game, although Brentford did pull one back at the end, but it was a pretty comfortable win in the end for us in that game. But, yeah, listen, I've got a lot of respect for Brentford. As I said, I love what they're doing. I love some of the players that they've got. Congratulations going out to Ivan Toney, who's got into the England squad, deservedly so, and what a player he is. And, you know, what I like about Brentford is the way they just seem to go out there, do it in the right way, scout correctly, bring in the right type of players that suit their system. And, yeah, I mean, you know, it's fantastic what they're doing. But we need to put a little dent in that Brentford team when we come up against them this weekend. So, you know, new season's going well for Arsenal so far. Only one defeat. We've won all our other games. We've looked pretty impressive. We've been playing a really good brand of football, attacking, exciting football. And as I said, we've got some very dangerous players. And, you know, the team's really spearheaded at the moment by Gabriel Jesus, who's really, really leading from the front. Our manager, Mikel Arteta, you know, again, he came out of the documentary, the All or Nothing documentary, looking really, really well. I think the fans are really, really behind him this season. He's under a bit of pressure because, you know, he spent a lot of money, so the fans are expecting a lot. But so far, he's been delivering. The Arsenal squad is looking good. As I said, I've spoken already about the new signings. I think the only thing I'd say is that the big problem is still in that sort of deep line defensive position in midfield. Thomas Partey, when he's fit, excellent player. Brilliant, one of the best in the league, I think, in that position. But it's when he's fit. He's been injured nearly half the time since he's been at Arsenal. And that's the problem. So I don't think he'll be fit in time for the game against Brentford. It'll probably be the youngster, Sambi Lokonga, playing in there. And we've had a problem there because, you know, we were trying to bring in a defensive midfielder before the end of the transfer window and we were unable to do that. So that is a problem, and that is an area I think that Brentford might be looking to exploit. I think for Brentford, the player that they're going to have to watch out for is Gabriel Jesus. He's been superb this season. He's quick, he's direct, he's sharp, and he doesn't give defenders a minute's peace. And I think that he's changed the whole dynamic. I mean, last year, it was like Alexander Lacazette at the front. It's completely change now with him leading from the front, and Arsenal are a team that scores goals. My top four and my bottom three this season. Top four, I'm going to go Manchester City winning it again. I think Liverpool, even though they've got off to a bad start, they'll be up there, there and thereabouts. I think Arsenal will be third and Tottenham will be fourth. I think Chelsea, they might have some issues this season with a change of manager. Manchester United are still in transition. The bottom teams, I called it sort of at the start of the season, my bottom three, and I'm kind of sticking with that, is more or less the teams that came up. Bournemouth, I think, are going to struggle. I think Nottingham Forest are going to struggle as well, despite all the players that they've bought. I think that they're going to struggle as well. And then I think the other team that goes down is really hard to say. I mean, I was saying that Southampton could be in some problems this season, but I think Southampton, I don't know, I think they might be all right this season. Fulham, I don't think, will go down. We played them and they're a good side. I was very impressed with them and they've got a good manager. So I don't think they're going to go down. I really don't know who that third team's going to be, but it won't be Brentford. Just going back on Brentford, listen, they took 3 points off of last season. And Brentford, they had a great season, I thought, last year. I remember they had a bit of a dip and I was a bit concerned for Brentford. I was thinking to myself, ooh, could they end up going down? But they then recovered it and deservedly stayed up and they really finished off the season strong. And obviously the player that I'm really fearful of is that man there. He's going to be super confident this week, Ivan Toney. He's just got into the England squad, so he's got the recognition now that he deserves. And he, for me, is going to be the real threat. We saw his comments last year when he said, just out for, just playing in the park with the lads. Well, that wound up a load of Arsenal players. We know that from the documentary because, the manager reminded the players of that. So Ivan Toney, we're going to have to definitely keep an eye out for him. I think it's going to be a really good game. I think Brentford are going to really try and press Arsenal. But the difference between us, I feel, and Manchester United when you press United is United, they move it very slow, very pedestrian. They're not good at playing out from the back. Arsenal are good at playing out from the back and they can catch teams on the counter-attack. So I really do feel that there's going to be goals in this game. My score prediction is 2-1. I think we've been letting in a bit too many goals recently, Arsenal. And at home, Brentford, their fans are going to be right up for it. But I think Arsenal this season are a different proposition to what Brentford faced on the first day of last season. There's a lot of firepower in the team. And players like Jesus, Martinelli, Saka, they're all playing well. Martin Odegaard as well has been superb. I think it's going to be a good game. But I'm going for Arsenal winning by 2-1. Big up to Billy Besotted. Big up to all of the Brentford fans. But yeah, we need the 3 points in this one. Take care.
There you go, Robbie from AFTV, giving us the lowdown on the Arsenal. And listen, there's no two ways about it. The Arsenal this season are very different than the Arsenal at the beginning of last season. And Arteta has come in and, and we said it from before because we know about it with Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank, if you've got a manager who's good, give them a bit of time to work their wonders. Get rid of the players who, to be quite honest, you ain't pulling their weight, the ones that don't fit in with what you're doing, all that kind of stuff. So Arteta has gone in there and he's done his thing. So the Arsenal fans were very unhappy with him 12 months ago and now very happy with him now. And he's doing well and the Arsenal team doing well and they're very dangerous. And if you check them out and the stats side of things as well, in the Justice League, they're second when they're actually first at the moment. But, it shows that they're actually creating big chances and putting them in the back of the net, which makes them a real danger. So there's something there that we need to look out for. So Arsenal, a bit of a worry, isn't it, Ellie?
100%. I mean, I think until they had that draw against United, I think they were...
Draw? It wasn't a draw. They lost.
No, yeah. They lost, didn't they? It was you throwing me, talking about... Or Laney throwing me, talking about their first... Us inflicting their first defeat of the season.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I fluffed.
They were really absolutely flying. They've been absolutely on fire, red hot. I think Odegaard is really, really a dangerous-looking player that we really have to keep quiet. Saka's been on really good form. It's a tough ask, the kick about with the boys' derby. Also, it's going to be difficult to get the atmosphere going before the game because of all the stuff surrounding the Queen. So I hope that once we kick off, we can get the atmosphere going and because that will make a massive difference. But I do think the team are going to be up for it. I would have preferred Arsenal to have had to play tonight, to be honest, somewhere foreign like Moldova. But unfortunately, that's not happened, so we've got to take it as it is. It's a tough ask. I think we can get a result. Whether or not we do get a result, is another matter. But it's a big game, and it will be a real test of where this team is at.
I don't see us being phased by it. You know, we take these things in our stride now. I think we could have been phased when we played them last time. I just think the euphoria and the kind of like that, you know, the incredible Friday night atmosphere got us through that, as well as us taking our chances. That's, you know, that Sergi Canos goal, you know, I can still picture that. I can still see Norgaard heading in the second from the long throw, and, you know, and I can still see David Raya making a save to keep it at 2-0, and, you know, made sure we, you know, got out of the stadium without having to change our underpants. But it was you know, it was a night never to be forgotten. And, you know, there have been others, and I think there will be others that are, you know, that kind of are close to emulating that. But I just don't see us being really phased by Arsenal coming there anymore. It's just, you know, another great team. We're not, you know, we'll give them respect, you know, we'll give them respect by giving them a game of football. We don't give them respect by letting them have all the possession and kind of sitting back and be afraid to put tackles in and, you know, be afraid to shoot a goal just in case you beat them. We'll give them respect by trying to play them off the park. That's the way we do our business, and I can't wait.
Listen, we're talking about Arsenal here as well. I mean, I know you mentioned the fact that they lost to Man United, and, you know, I mean, they're doing straight equations again. You know, when I went down to AFTV, you know, I spoke to Turkish, really, really good guy. Check it out as well. I did a little piece on AFTV, which is just basically, we just talked football for about 40 minutes, and it's great, you know, because it's none of this sort of shock jock business. It's just chatting football for 40 minutes. And he just said, look, I've got a bit of a fear because Brentford, you know, Brentford beat Man United 4-0 and we lost to Man United, I think 3-1 it is, you know, so that's my worry. Immediately, what I do is I do the Brentford thing. And I look, because I didn't see that game. Okay, I didn't see that game. Didn't even see match of the day. So I've looked at the stats and I looked at it and I thought, hold on a second. XG, you know, 1.70 Arsenal to 1.51. So they actually kind of slightly over, you know, did them on the chances created front. But Man United obviously were more clinical, put the ball in the back of the net. But that game could have been a 1-1 game. It could have been a 2-1 game. It could have gone either way. And, you know, it looks like Arsenal, They did all right, because, you know, they kind of kept Man United to create, you know, maybe probably a little bit too many chances than they could have done. But at the end of the day, is that if they put them chances away, literally three goals Arsenal could have put away, and they didn't. Actually, there were very, very good chances. And this is me just looking at the stat data here. So that, to me, is not a case of, you know, if a team has not got that, then you think, okay, tell something, I'm cool and I can handle that. But the fact that it looks like Arsenal are still creating and they're still being dangerous even when they're losing means that we completely and utterly have to be on our ball. And as we know, and we've said this as well, defensively we've had situations where, you know, we've had to recover from 2-0 downs too many times this season, where a team will hit us and if they don't hit us back. And also the other thing is that, again, if you look at the data against Leeds United as well, I mean, if you look at it, it is ridiculous. We have got so many big red bubbles inside the penalty area. We could have scored about 8 goals against Leeds United, and that is no lie. Big, big, big chances, like, you know, big high quality chances, probably about 8 goals, but Leeds could have scored about 5 goals against us. So it was one of them Kevin Keegan type games, as I talked about before, where, you know, we gave them a lot and they gave us a lot as well. We can't do that against Arsenal, because if they do, they're going to destroy us. They're going to destroy us, you know what I'm saying? So we need to sort out this defence and stop giving the ball away so much in midfield and all that lot, and try and play the game like we did against Manchester United and these other teams where we're a little bit tighter. And I know that Ethan's not in the side, which is a little bit of an issue. And I'm going to ask you, because it's been so long since we played football, what is the situation with Ayo? Because I think he was on the bench for one of the matches, wasn't he, Ali?
Well, I assume he's fit, because he's going off with Norway, oh, nice. Isn't he? He's been selected for Norway. Presumably, we've let him go to get match fitness, I think. But whether or not he'll start, it depends. I suppose it depends what system we're going to go with. If we're going to go with three centre-halves, then, you know, he's the obvious one to come in. We're going to go with four at the back. I can't see Pontus or me either getting dropped to the bench at the moment, especially me. He's been fantastic, hasn't he? So, Yeah, that's an interesting one for me. That's an interesting one. But I completely agree with, we've got to be solid defensively. We can't give the ball away so much in midfield. Arsenal are a lot, lot better side than Leeds. And if we give them the number of chances that we gave Leeds, they'll take them, and we won't win that game.
Are we looking for perfection? Or would you take a 5-4 no. win now?
Oh, 100%. But I don't think Arsenal are going to give us 4 goals.
Would you take it? Oh, crikey! You know, it could be one of those days that you're just like dripping with kind of nerves. It's going to be a nail biter, I think. You know, I, as long as we don't let them run away with it, which, you know, I just don't think we will. I think we're always going to be in it. I think we're always going to create enough chances to keep us in most games. I think we've all said it in different ways. Like, anything is possible again, and I just hope it goes our way.
We can't give them a 2-goal head start. No. We just can't, because we won't. A side of Arsenal's quality, we're not going to be coming back from 2-0 down. We really have to try and get the first goal.
Yeah, and what I said on AFTV today is, I said the thing about it is that, you know, what has been really nice is, like, listen, you know, whether we win or lose, what at the moment now, we're just enjoying us watching our football and the football that we're playing, because that we're seeing some really great games, and the teams that we're playing are helping to contribute. You know, even Fulham, brilliant games of football. So some of them you win, some of them you lose, but they're really, really exciting. And for me, is that you can't really knock that. You know, you come to football to be entertained, and like, some of them are like, you know, your heart's in the back of your mouth. I mean, the Everton game was a different one, because they came there to try. They were anti football when they came down, but that's one team. But other than that, it's been some really great football. So if Arsenal come down and it's a 7-7 game, brilliant. It's a 7-7 game. I'm happy with that, because that's what we come down here to see. And I think that's a real bonus of where we're at and where we've grown to. But listen, I'm just going to just go through what we're up against here, because we can get a little bit nervous here. Arsenal are good at creating long shot opportunities and also creating chances through individual skill, and also scoring finishing chances they're good at. Attacking set pieces they're good at, and also defending set pieces they're good at. But where they're weak is in the air, and also avoiding individual errors, and also defending against through ball attacks. So they take a lot of shots, they like their short passes, they control the ball in our half, in effect. They attack through the middle, and their opponents normally play aggressively against them, and they play the same 11, so you kind of know who's going to be playing. So this, you said a ooh there, Ali. So you see there's a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel there.
Well, first of all, not good at defending against in the air. So, you know, with our strength in the air, especially with Ivan, that's a definite plus for us. The other one about
three balls.
Weak three balls. I did watch the United game, and a certain person who we don't talk about killed them with three balls, and that's why they lost 3-1. So I think we play the three ball game really well as well. So I think that's really, those stats are really interesting, and I think very much.
Yeah, we've definitely got the ammunition to hurt them. I mean, it's unquestionable, you know. And then going back, like rewinding just one phase, is we have to keep reminding ourselves as well that this second season syndrome myth. We, you know, let's keep proving the doubters and those people that said that we're going to struggle wrong. The incentives for us to succeed this year are huge financially, but again, it's just like, just to show that, you know, we've beaten Man United 4-0, we've beaten Leeds 5-2, we've got a player that's just been picked as a striker for England. Yeah, the signs are all good that this season's going to continue to be a success, regardless of what happens on Sunday. Sunday, if we get any points out of it, if we get 3 points out of it, is a massive bonus. If we get one, I'll take that now. But the most important thing is that Brentford are not buckling in their second season. We are thriving, and we are a force to be reckoned with. And Arsenal are going to get both barrels of that again on Sunday morning.
And it's the Premier League. We are going to lose games.
You're right.
We have to accept that we're going to lose games, and we're going to lose quite a few games. But, you know, a lot of it is about the performance. A lot of it is about not buckling, and a lot of it is about teams coming down to the G-Tech and actually sort of like not thinking that they're going to walk, not thinking they're going to walk all over us, and sort of like us having a real presence in the Premier League, which I think we do now.
Teams like Arsenal,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so do you think it's actually quite interesting, because obviously Ivan Toney absolutely destroyed Ben White last season, £50 million Ben White, and he was just like properly had him in his pocket and just did him big time. You know what I'm saying, last week. Now, interestingly, Ben White he's been shifted from the centre of defence to I think he's on the right now as well. So he's like he's a fullback. He's gone fullback case, which will be quite interesting because you know, to see who he's going to be coming up against. So that's a little interesting shift. And obviously, Ivan Toney now will be having the battle with Saliba in the middle as well, which could be quite interesting, couldn't it?
Feisty. Yeah, there could be a couple of yellow cards, I reckon, Bill.
That's right, it could be a few yellow cards.
Might even be a red.
And also interesting as well, I think he's, we're talking about England goalkeeper and England striker, sort of one-on-one type situation as well. So who's going to come out best on that one, do you think, Lainey?
The striker.
Especially if there's a penalty.
Of course. Tell you something, you're so good at these quizzes. You're so good at these quizzes, Lainey. We should enter you for the besotted member of the every quiz
member
ever entered around the world. You know what I'm saying? Which is all good.
So, I'd rather have JB. I think you would pick him, to be honest with you.
Right, we may have to get him as your deputy or something like that. So deputy dog. So, but listen, we talked enough about this Arsenal game because it's going to be upon us. First of all, like I said to you, we're getting down the pub at the crack of dawn in the Globe, which is going to be great. We've invited some Arsenal chums to come down as well. You're more than welcome to come down the Boozo. I know my Arsenal chums are coming down and meeting us down the pub as well. Maybe a few of the AFTV characters may be coming down if they can get away from being outside the stadium with their microphones and all that kind of stuff and just come and chill out and enjoy the match beforehand with us, friendly Bees fans. But listen, score prediction, because everyone here seems a bit joyous and jubbly, and I know we saw 5 goals in the previous game, but surely we can't score as many goals in this game. I'm going to ask you, Mr. Lane, what is your score prediction?
I am going to go for a high scoring 4-3 Brentford win.
Ooh. Miss Ali Malali, miss.
I'm going to be pessimistic and go for a 3-2 Arsenal win, I'm afraid.
Oh, outrageous.
Sorry.
And I tell you what, I'm going to go for this being the Liverpool game of this season at home, that is. And it's going to be 3-3. Brentford 3, Arsenal 3. So there you go. So
I will be more than happy to be proved wrong, though, as I always am.
Me too. I'll take a point right now.
Yeah. So anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget to go and buy us a beer if you like what we do. besotted.com/beer. Also, Besotted Global is our little social media community that's out there that's talking all sorts of stuff and everything like that. If you want to join us, besotted.com/global as well. Go and check us out. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all good podcast channels as well, and write us a review in iTunes because it goes up in the charts and it does all sorts of very, very nice things as well. We're going to have a day off on Saturday. Well, I haven't got a day off on Saturday because my team, the Barnet Panthers, have got their first games. Actually, very, very excited after setting up a club. Myself and Darren, the B, and Dave, DJ Dave, the West Ham fan as well, we set up this club, and first games for all three of our teams as well. So very, very exciting. So there's no Premier League football to sort of distract us, so we're going properly grassroots on Saturday. So fingers crossed on that one. Very, very exciting on the Saturday.
Yeah, good luck, Bill.
Yeah, good luck.
And the girls.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good luck to the girls as well. And then we're going to focus on Sunday, because on Sunday then I'm going to be in the Boozer very, very early with my man Lainey and anyone else who wants to come down there as well.
Might have a bit of champagne, Bill.
You might have a bit of champagne as well, because I've got my man Lainey in the house.
Yes, good evening.
And I've got Ali Malali in the house.
Good evening.
Good evening to you too. Like I said to you, very, very excited. He's going to have some champagne. Ivan Toney's been playing for England. He's got 3 lines on his shirt. We're very, very happy. We've got all that's gold. We've got the Arsenal coming down and we beat them last season.
God save the king.
As we say.
God save the king.
Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees.
Arsenal team with our England striker right up front. You bees.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with 3 for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.